Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, today I have on my friend Jason Ramos. So this is a story of true transformation. You know when you have people in your life that you think they're too far gone, they'll never come back. I'm going to tell you right now that this story will change your mind. It will also change your mind on how you look at people, people that you might have a different perspective of, people that you might think, oh, those people are in gangs, they do drugs, they do all these different things, they'll never make it. I'm going to tell you a story today. Jason's going to tell you a story today of how God completely transformed his life. And it is amazing. Buckle up because this is one you will not want to miss. Hey, Jason, thanks so much for being with us on Be Love, Do Good podcast. I get to see you every day, which is fun. So it's fun talking to you just on a conversation on our podcast. So thanks for being on.
Awesome. Glad to be here with you, Christy.
So I kind of intro'd you before, but Jason and I work together, and Jason has one of my favorite stories of transformation, of just who he was before and who God has changed him into. And it's just this incredible story of redemption and restoration. But one of the things that we love to talk about on Be Love Podcast is how we can truly serve others and love others, you know, even in those really hard spaces. And so today I wanted you to come on, Jason, and just kind of tell your story, because I think you are someone, like, if we went out and loved someone pre-Jesus, Jason pre-Jesus, yeah, we might be nervous to serve or to love you or maybe even give up on you. I'd love for you just to kind of tell a little bit of what was it like you growing up? What was your adolescence like? And how did that kind of take you through to the Jason that you are now?
Sure. So, Christy, and thanks, you know, again, like who God's changed me into, but I'm still being changed into who God's changing me into day by day. But you know, my story, growing up, you know, it was pretty rough. My mother and my father divorced at an early age. My dad ended up, he was in the Marine Corps, but then he ended up going to prison. And so after he went to prison, my mom, they got divorced and they had got divorced and then he ended up going to prison and she had remarried a man that was really abusive to her. And so this guy used to beat her pretty regular. It was really nice at first when they first got married, and then they started using drugs together, and their addiction took control of their lives, and just became a normal thing to see mom getting beat up. And so when I say beat up, go ahead.
How old were you at that time when she got remarried?
I'm about 5 years old. Okay. 4, 5, 6. Yeah, 7 years old. During their marriage, my mom's second marriage. But you know, again, I was a little kid. I had a twin brother. I have an older sister. And so it was very violent, and you know, there was common mom to have black eyes, broken bones, you know, and the whole time would always think my dad's going to come save us, you know, he's going to come rescue us. But dad never showed up. And then he ended up going to prison. So, but as a little kid, you know, I didn't know that. So my life was like that early on. My grandpa came in and rescued us one day. My brother and I, we took off running to my grandparents' house and told them that mom was getting beat up. And so my grandpa went back to the house and rescued my mom out of there and pulled us out. And so when we got away from her, her husband at the time, she was, you know, then struggling mentally, emotionally, physically. Sure. She had all this abuse and mixed it in with some drug addiction as well. And so we moved into the housing projects, and, you know, my brother and I, we're just normal little kids though. We love baseball. We love sports. We love geography, played G.I. Joes all the time in the backyard and the dirt hills, you know, loved to go fishing when we could. But we were just regular kids, and then we joined, got to middle school. You know, we lived in the housing projects, and then we joined middle school, and we got to middle school. Whole world changed with a whole different group of kids. You know, I started stealing cars, smoking weed, started going in and out of juvenile, and so by the end of my eighth grade year, I had tried cocaine for the first time and got addicted to cocaine. And so
in eighth grade, let me take you back just in the middle school year. So in eighth grade, so tell us a little bit for those, like when you say the projects, like what does that look like? What is that environment for you as basically a, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, growing up in that, what was that like, if you can remember?
Yeah. So all the kids out there, you know, it was just like, boom, run around all day in the apartment complex, play football, run around, you know, the mattress outside doing backflips, you know what I'm saying? All that, just a bunch of kids running around. But then at the same time, there was all kinds of stuff going on. Police were constantly coming and going from there. We had a security guard who had an M16 that rode around the apartment complex. We had a swimming pool, but the swimming pool had no water in it. It was filled with trash bags. And you know, I can remember, you know, as a kid, seeing the SWAT team trying to pull a guy out of the apartment that was, you know, highly intoxicated on drugs. And so seeing those sorts of things like that. So it was a lot of community there. Everybody knew everybody, mm-hmm. but everybody knew when somebody from the outside was coming in. And it was tough. It was hard. Yeah.
Did you feel ever safe in that environment? Like, you were younger, so, you know, we work with kids who are in the same situations, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade. And, you know, just hearing that perspective, like, did you feel this constant, like, angst and anxiousness and all of that? Or was there also, because it was home, you felt, you know, like it was home?
It was very normal. Okay. Very common. You know, it was constant action every day, something going on. And a lot of it was tough stuff, you know. There was high drug usage in the apartment complexes all around us. There was a lot of drug activity going on. Again, police always coming and going. So it was very common. You know, even as a kid, you know, I knew when you went to school, you didn't talk about the funny smelling mm-hmm. cigarette that got smoked, you know what I'm saying? Or you didn't talk about the fighting that was happening in the house. So it was like, most people didn't know that my brother and I, we were experiencing that. But mm-hmm. then I don't know how many other kids that were experiencing that as well, you know?
Okay. So you went to middle school, and that's when things kind of got real for you. What made that, like, why did you start cocaine? Like, who introduced you to that? Kind of give us that scenario.
Sure. So first thing I started smoking weed, marijuana. You know, I can remember being across the street at another apartment with one of my good friends, and we were both kids, and he had got some from his parents, and we went into a little shed and smoked some, the little storage shed, and we smoked it. And, you know, I didn't really know what we were doing, but there was this, looking back now, there was this place of really just wanting to belong. Mm-hmm. You know, we ended up, the gang I was in, probably about 100, 125 kids, and, you know, it's like, we just looking for a place to where we belong to. And it wasn't like, now it sounds cheesy if I say I was just wanting to belong.
It's true.
But as a kid, you know, that's exactly what it was. And so I found myself running along to do things that I didn't normally would have done. But because I was going with this new group of kids that I was around, I went with the crowd. That's exactly what I did, is I went with the crowd. And, you know, I still in cars, like I'm running around with some friends, and one of them says, hey, let's get in this car. Let's go take it for a ride. And so we get in it and we find a way to break into it and get it started. And
how old were you? Could you even drive? Like, how old were you?
I learned to drive. My mom's boyfriend drove a 1976, Monte Carlo, one of them big boats, you know what I'm saying? So I learned to drive out there by the lake in one of those. So I knew how to drive.
Got it.
But again, it was like, for what was I going to do in this car, but get in it and then get caught, you know? So I found myself back and forth in and out of juvenile, as a 12, 13, 14, 15 year old kid. I mean, I think I probably went to juvenile about 12 to 13 times, as a kid, and ended up going to juvenile boot camp for a little time. But that was my early teenage life. And then when I started the cocaine, a lot of our friends, their dad sold drugs. And so what we did was we'd break in one of their rooms on Friday night and steal some stuff, go sell. My friend would go sell a little bit of it, and we'd rent a motel room. And as a group of teenage kids, we'd hang out and drink alcohol and smoke weed and do cocaine for the weekend, you know?
Did you feel during that time, like, were you living with your mom at the time, or were you still with your grandparents? Like, how was that home situation? Was there anyone who, like, came in and saw you and said, like, Jason, what the heck are you doing? Like, was there anyone that intervened or you felt like would see you in a different way so that you didn't have to do these things, you know, that saw Jason?
Sure. Mostly all my family were involved in it. So they all used. And so, we were constantly back and forth to grandma's house. We would go get a house or get an apartment. We'd stay there for a little bit. And then all of a sudden we'd get evicted. And then we'd move back to my nanny's house. And so every year I always say I went to Alta Vista every year.
Got it.
Every year we ended up back where my grandma's house was. And so everybody was kind of consumed or wrapped up in their world of what was going on. And so that's why I think my brother and I, when we got to middle school, we kind of ran loose and gravitated to this group of kids that were all running kind of loose, you know?
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where when I got involved with, you know, drugs and stuff like that, that because of their accessibility, as a young kid, it was highly accessible. And then there was people always flooding, you know, youth and kids in our community to be the ones to go out and sell it for them, that the older people were a lot of times the one coming to buy it, you know? And it was like, so it was like, didn't see the, you know, as a 14, 15 year old kid, when an older adult treats you real nice because you got something they really want, then, you know, and they're doing these things, then you don't tend to be like, wow, they're the bad guys, you know, saying,
right.
Maybe. So
it's normal. I mean, it felt like a normal thing, and
very normal.
Very normal. The chaos, the things that we and probably our listeners would be like, that feels very not normal, you know, to us. That was absolutely your normal. Right. So take us through high school. Did you graduate high school? Sure. What kind of happened through there?
No, so I often tell people the last full grade I completed on my own was sixth grade. When I went to seventh grade, I got expelled, and then I went to a summer school, watched some movies, went on some field trips, and they passed me up.
Oh my
Same
gosh.
Thing, eighth grade, I got expelled for fighting because I was in a gang. They gave me the opportunity to go to summer school. I went on some field trips, you know, watched some movies, and they passed me to the ninth grade. In ninth grade, high school, my high school life was fully on gang, drugs, cocaine. And I kept getting in trouble. I kept getting in trouble. And then I ended up going to boot camp. And when I got out of boot camp, juvenile boot camp, I told my mom, I said, Mom, I said, I'm tired of going to juvenile. I'm tired of getting locked up. I'm just going to get my GED. And so she said, all right. And so I went and applied. I went and did no classes. I just went and took my test. When I took my test, I passed, like, no problem. And it was like, I didn't know the content or the work. It's just I couldn't stay out. I couldn't go to school, and I couldn't stay out of trouble. So I got out of school at 16. I got my GED, and my life was just in full on selling dope, doing dope, smoking weed every day. And so in my house, everybody smoked weed.
Yeah.
I mean, we all, parents, you know, brothers, sisters, and that was common. It's very normal. So I'll use the word sometimes when I get around people and tell them, like, it's normal. I'm not saying it's right, or we're not talking about if it's right or wrong. I just want you to know this is what's normal
for
people. And so it's because it's hard to sometimes grasp that that's an everyday thing, an everyday lifestyle, not just for that individual or that family, but for their whole, not their whole community, but a lot of their community. So my teenage life was consumed with, consumed with cocaine. Okay. So as I got onto a young adult, you know, I met my wife, you know, I knew her from when we were younger, but we started seeing each other, and our relationship was kind of started on just going out and partying. And, you know, when we got together, she had two boys, 4 years old and 13 months old. And so we started dating, and then she ended up getting pregnant. And it was like, she was getting bigger and bigger. And I was like, okay, Jason, it's time to chill out, man up, take care of business. But I didn't know how. The baby came, and right before the baby came, I remember one night I had got a job, and I was starting to do right, but I was still mixed up in drinking and doing drugs a lot. And I got in a car wreck one night, and I got charged with DWI and failure to render aid, and I totaled the car. And I woke up the next morning, I was like, man, what am I doing? Like, man, like, what are you doing? The very thing that my dad had went to prison for, that I had did, you know. And but I didn't stop. Son was born about a month later, and had this magical moment in the hospital, like all these years wondering what it was like to have a dad. And you know, I tell people, I used to see kids at the baseball field all the time with their dad and wonder what that was like. And I said, here I am, I'm gonna be the best dad, you know, holding this baby, and I'm telling them, I'm gonna teach them all these things. But when I left the hospital, I didn't know how, you know. I knew how to run the streets, and my brokenness, I wanted it, I desired it, I deeply desired to be a dad and be a husband. I just couldn't do it. And so I spiraled further and further out of control. About 6 months later, after my son was born, one night I got robbed. I used the word jack. I got jacked. I was in an apartment complex, and I got robbed by some guys, and they chased me, and I fought them, and a third guy came up behind me and hit me in the back of the head with a pistol, and then they, you know, I got hit across the face 7 times with a pistol, and then I got shot, and so I ended up having to have, you know, reconstructive surgery on my face. I couldn't walk for a little while, and I struggled after that with some serious PTSD. I felt real small right after that. Like, when I left the hospital and went home, I felt real little, like I couldn't make sense of what had just happened to me. And so I started to struggle, and I couldn't make sense of what had just happened to me. And I ended up back over there where I got shot at, in my car. I managed to get myself in my car one day with an assault rifle, and I'm driving around these apartment complexes looking for these guys.
Like, you were going to go for revenge.
Yeah, I was going to go for revenge. Okay. I tell people all the time, like, I was not the guy. I fought a lot. I was in and out of jail. I was in the gangs, but I was never the guy who was like malicious. Like, I just want to do evil and hurt somebody. For those that can't see me in person, I'm not that big of a guy. And when I was a teenager and growing up, I was really light. I was a light guy. I was a thin guy. So I got picked on at different places, and it caused me to fight a lot. So, but after this had happened, you know, all these voices of people, like the new family, friends, like, Twin, we're going to get these guys. We're going to get these guys when you get better. A guy brought me an assault rifle, said, here, when you get better, go get them. So I put it in the closet, and I sat there recovering on the couch at the house, and I kept looking back and forth at the closet thinking, man, I got to do something. I got to do something. So I got myself in the car. I drove over there, and I'm looking, and then people are coming up to the car asking me what I'm doing, and I'm looking for people. And then I look in my rearview mirror, and I got my six-month-old baby with me in the car seat, and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? You know, like, I can't believe this. Like,
so it, oh, that occurred to you, like, in the midst of that, that is still occurring to you. Like, oh my gosh.
So I started having all these, like, I got on my feet again, but I kept having these nightmares and sweats, and I ended up, went to jail for a little bit. I got out, and when I got out, I was sober. But then when I went to a house after I got out, that same day, I went to my relative's house, and they were smoking meth, and I tried it. And so next thing you know, for the next whole year, I started using meth, and I found myself 25 years old. I was living in an abandoned house, no lights, no gas, no water. And I was addicted to meth. And literally, like in the movies, I had my little Ozarka 5-gallon water bottle. I took to the gas station, filled it up with water. And that's what I used to take a bath and brush my teeth and drink, you know, and all day long, people coming and going and using, and just me and my dog living there, you know what I'm saying? And then somebody came through. My brother got out of prison, and somebody came through, and they gave him a bunch of stuff. And the next thing you know, found myself making money and selling. And
where's your family at this time? Has she been like, no?
Yeah,
I'm so done with you.
Monica, we were split up. Like, it was like, I was the guy. Like, I told her, I was at the door, beating on the door, let me see if I can, you know. But I was just like, I was out of control.
I mean, I wish people knew you, like, because I know you. I'm sitting here with my mouth open, because if you know Jason, he's the kindest, like, sweetest person. So to hear, I've heard these story, you know, a little bit of your story before, but even to hear you say that, this is why I love your story so much. You're a totally different person now. I mean, I can't even recognize this person that you're telling me. Like, you could be telling me about someone, like your friend, and that would make more sense than you telling me about you. Okay, so sorry. It's mind-boggling to me. Okay, so you and Monica were split up.
Yeah, we were split up. And the reason she, it was, I was so, it was, I was gone. It was, mm-hmm. you know, you mix in the what had happened with me, you mix that in with the drugs and then all my brokenness already. I was just a mess. And, so she had to get, she got away, but then we started seeing each other, got back together. And then she ended up getting addicted to the meth as well. And next thing you know, 4 years goes by, like literally 4 years goes by. I went to bed hitting a glass pipe and I woke up hitting a glass pipe, meth, both. And so this is the exact week, 15, what are we at, 22? In 2006, five, our son had, our oldest, he had asked his mom, said, "Mom, for my 10th birthday, I want to go to church." And so I'd never been to church before. You know, his teacher was going through a discipleship school that we later found out about him, that he was at a discipleship school at Antioch, and he was praying for his students at that time. And he was kind of little here and there sharing to our son about Jesus, but we didn't know at the time. But just getting to meet down the road, that seeing he was a part of the story. But so he had asked his mom to go to church, and so Monica, she feels all bad, like, here I am, we're all on drugs, and like my son's asking me to go to church. Right. So just to keep a long story short, before the day before she was going to take him to church, she went to HEB and she ran into these girls, and they was like, "Hey, you know, can we pray for you?" And Monica was like, "That's weird. No, I don't know." But she was like, "All right, go ahead. Pray. I need a job. I need a job. Pray for me. I need a job." So the girls prayed that she would get a job. But when I was leaving the grocery store at the exact same time of walking out the store, her old boss was walking in, and they looked at each other. And he's like, "Hey, where you been? Like, come back to work." And she's like, "Oh my gosh,
that's amazing."
So the next day she goes to church. And then she calls those girls up and she says, "Hey, I just want to tell you, your prayer got answered. Yesterday I got a job and I went to church. And in fact, this is what's going on in my life. I'm addicted to drugs and this, this, and this." And so the ladies prayed for her. And so she went to church over the next couple of weeks. And 3 weeks later, she heard about Jesus and she gave her life to him. And she came home that day and she was like, I was in the restroom smoking meth and look, you know, in the bathroom. And she walks in and she's like, "Guess what happened?" I was like, "What?" And she was like, "I got saved today." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I don't know what that means, but okay." And she goes, "And I don't want to use no more." And that day she got free from the meth addiction that she'd been struggling with. And so she said, you know, we ended up going down the road and separating because she had to get away with the kids. You know, she got housing herself and moved in with an apartment. And I was spiraling further out of control.
Because I'm feeling like when she said that to you, you weren't like, "Yay, good job, no, babe."
I did. Look here. This is the truth. Like, I lived in Waco mostly all my whole life, and I grew up here. And I did not really understand what she meant when she said she got saved. And so there's a large part of our culture and our city that people that don't understand the terminology or the concept of what it means to be saved. I didn't know what that meant. Sure. I was like, saved from what?
Yeah, you
know?
Right.
So we ended up splitting up. She's going on this new road, and I spiral in this depression because I'm like, I'm doing all this for us. Like, I'm out here. My mindset really was like, I'm out here in the streets trying to make money to take care of us. Mm. But it was just, the enemy just had me spiraling further and further out of control. And so, you know, just to keep it short, I ended up catching a charge not long after that. And then ended up trying to dodge, but one day broke down and just wrote a letter to God, flushed what I had, and asked for him to come take me by the hand out of it. The next day, after writing that letter, the next day, the probation department caught up with me. And I heard when they wanted to lock me up, I heard the voice of God inside me said, "Hey," I had never heard that voice before. And it said, "You prayed about this and you asked for help. Here it is." And from that day, I knew it was him. I knew. And I said, "Okay." And I was gone. See, my whole family, my twin brother was in and out of federal prison, U.S. Marshals, Secret Service, everything, you know, just all just a whirlwind. And you know, my sister was addicted to meth. My mother, my dad was in and out of prison. So my whole life was just like ducking and dodging and avoiding. But I felt it when I heard his voice that day. I felt like I tell people all the time, I was given the opportunity to go to jail.
I was going to say, but that's probably the only thing that would have got you out of that environment. Like, had you not gotten out of that environment, you wouldn't have been able to get clean or do what you needed to do.
Yeah. And everybody in there was frustrated, aggravated in jail. And I was happy. I was like, new lease on life.
Nice.
All I kept seeing was the new life ahead of me. New life ahead of me. If I got a little tray of food, I was like, praise God. Thank you. You know what I'm saying? And I got there. I didn't know how, but I started to read my Bible. I started to pray. And I just felt this overwhelming, like really, Christy, like an overwhelming sense of peace came upon my life. I try to explain it to people, but it was a miracle. God rescued me. He rescued me and set me free.
So after you are in jail, how long are you in jail? Is it prison? Is it jail? Help me understand that.
So I went to a facility out in Lubbock. I was in the county jail, and they sent me to a facility in Lubbock, Texas. They said, we're going to send you there for 6 months to 2 years. And so I went there, and I was there for about 9 months. And so it was probably about, in that facility, it was probably about 260 guys. It wasn't popular. People didn't love Jesus. They weren't trying to follow God. But I was just like, I was going after him. And so I spent my days just getting to know him and praying. Every time they had, whether it was a Catholic priest or a Baptist person or whatever, any
man
that came to the facility, I was there in front of them. I was helping them set up. I was up there reading their readings for the day.
You were like so hung. And what's amazing to me is like, God like put that in you. There was no, there wasn't really a person, which makes me a little sad, that there was no real person who like with Monica, you know, that those two girls or the girls at HEB kind of like spurred her. But you didn't really there was no one really that came alongside you and was like, hey, I see that you're spiraling down a really horrible thing. You know, have you ever thought of this, or I'm here to care for you or serve for you? Like, you didn't have that. God literally did that in you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, part of my journey. There was a time when somebody did pray for me on a Halloween outreach. I took my son trick-or-treating in 2005, and I went down on Austin Avenue. If you're not from Waco, Austin Avenue is where they give the big candy bars at. So it means the whole city going to show up on Austin Avenue on Halloween, right? And so there's thousands of people down there, right? And we come upon this house, and there's these kids, and they're out there doing a drama, and they're like praying for people, and so whenever I walk by, my son's getting some candy, this guy comes in like, hey, can I pray for you? And I was like, nah. I said, all right, man, you know what, yeah, I'm this. And so he prayed for me. He goes, hey, come to church today. And he said come to church on Sunday and I'll look for you. And I said, all right, but I never went. And it wasn't until 2 years later, when I'm getting released from the facility that I was in, one of the pastors that used to go do services there, he said, Jason, you got a church you're going to go to when you get out? And I said, nah. I said, but there's this one somebody invited me to before. He goes, oh yeah. He goes, what's the name of it? And I said, I don't know. I can't remember. He pulled out his laptop and I said, I don't know. It's called Anti something. And he goes, he looked on his computer. He goes, was it called Antioch? And I said, yeah, that's it. Antioch.
To
the church I'm in right now.
That what's amazing in that story is like sometimes, like I'm just going to be honest with you. Like sometimes, like the, can I pray for you? Like when you don't know that person, or can I share the gospel? Like I love having that relationship, being in the trenches, because I always will be like that. But when I hear these stories, I'm like, there is that seed that is planted just from that guy, you know, saying that to you, which you thought was total bogus. Like at the time you're like, this is so cheesy and bogus. But after two years after God's been working on you, then you're like, oh yeah, what is that church called? I mean, yeah. It's amazing how God uses like even like the things that we might think are kind of like out there, cheesy or, you know, whatever. There's a place for everybody. Like there's a place for the people who do that. There's a place for the people who are in the trenches with you. You know, when you came out of prison, Like, what's your relationship with your wife? Are you guys completely not talking? Have you talked at all in prison? And then did you go to that church? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, so me and Monica had been – we were split up for a year while I was out here. And then when I was gone for about a year altogether, we were split up. So we had been now 2 years separated from each other. When I was gone, we didn't talk. No letters, no visits. You know, she was hurt. You know, she was like – you know, she was changing life and had the responsibility of the kid and, you know, and just so much love and heart for our kids that she was like, she had to make those decisions. But, and that out of that brought some pain and hurt. So when I came home a brand new man, like really like brand new physically. I mean, I went from like 135 to 180, you know, I was looked different.
Yeah.
My face was what I sounded different. My life was just different. So when I came home different man. I remember I went by and I always laugh. I always tell her when I went by to see her, see the kids, I stand at the door and I'm all like, I'm all healthy and my chest is like, you know, full. And she answered the door. She's been cleaning the house. And she's like, oh, you know, hold on. So,
she like was, well, because you were a meth addict before. And if, yes. You know, we have familiarity with what that looks like. And yeah, you didn't look like that anymore.
I looked totally different. Yeah. You know, my face was full color skin, everything. And then there was a vibrancy in my life, in my tone, my spirit. Before I left, I was very downcast and sad and just, you know, depressed and broken. And this was a new life. And so we started talking, seeing each other. And then we ended up getting back together, got married, had twins, you know. And so, but when I came home, I mean, that's a fast forward of our coming back together. It's a neat journey of that, of God doing some amazing things. But when I went to the church, I didn't know anybody there. Walked in looking for somewhere to sit, and a family invited me over, and it was like, hey, come sit over here with us. And I said, all right. So me and my son Austin, we sat down with them, and I said, hey, after the service, I go, we're going to lunch, we're going to eat pizza, you want to go? And I said, sure. I said, but I don't got a car. And they said, oh, you can ride with us. And I said, okay. We went to lunch, we talked. They said, hey, we got this group that meets tonight called Life Group. Would you like to come? And I was like, sure again, but I ain't got no car. Come get you. So they lived on one side of town, and they drove across town to pick me up and take me to this group. And
were you nervous when they ask you these things, because they probably were not someone you would normally hang out with? What were you feeling, nervous? Like, what if they find me out, or like an insecurity about it? Or were you just like, I don't even care. I just want, I'm so hungry for Jesus and for community. I don't even care.
Yeah, not at all. I was hungry. When I left the facility, I said, Lord, I said, I want to go wherever the people that are following you are at, wherever those people are, whether they look the same culture or whatever. I didn't even think about those things. I was just like, I want to be where people are hungry for you, God. And so whenever, when I got led there, when these people invited me to sit and they invited me, I was taking it as like, this is the invitation, step into it. And so, and it was neat, because here I am. I'm this guy from the neighborhood, come from lifestyle, I just got out, and I go to this house, and there's this life group, and it's like business owner, marketing professor, this person, and like this house is like huge.
I'm guessing they don't live by your house.
But you know what? And none of them
cared.
When I walked in, they asked me my name. I introduced myself, and then people just started introducing themselves. We started talking. Nobody was like real awkward, and like, you know, nobody. It wasn't like I was a project. It was like they just welcomed me in, and then I invited Monica to come in, and next thing you know, we started coming as a family. They started investing in us, and you know, I remember Amy Marsh, sweet, sweet lady. She would drive to my job and drop off some Bible study material at lunch because I was taking a class that night. And so it was awesome.
I love what you just said, that no one made me a project. Yeah. Like, they literally loved you for you, and no one needed to know your backstory. No one needed to know, like, they just wanted to be with you because you were God's creation. I think that's really important, especially for Christians. Like, you were not a project. You were just a creation of God that they loved.
Yeah. And, you know, I had some beliefs in my own self too. It was like, you know, growing up here, it was like, well, you know, for those that don't see me, I'm Mexican. I'm actually mixed, Mexican and white. My mom's white. And, you know, but we come from lower income. And I had this belief that, oh, if they're with Baylor, then that means they all got money. You know, they look people different. But when it, so whenever I started to have these relationships with them, it was like those beliefs. Mm. Were, I was like, wait up, these are real people too. So it was a neat thing that God was doing in both of us.
Thanks so much for listening today. Obviously, we are not done with Jason's story. We wanted to make it two parts because I really want you to grasp what he's saying and really get into a perspective that you've maybe never been in, into someone else's shoes. So stay tuned for next week where Jason will continue his incredible story of how God transformed his life.